Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager. Tonight, we're going to continue with the theme of disinformation that I described last week. I have a full plate here, and I hope I can get through it all. I'm going to try. I've come to believe that if it were not for these fakey performers, the fight against the real enemy, which is ignorance, could make headway, and many more people would be a part of it. Rather than enlightening and illuminating the situation, they are obscuring it. Do you need to have the events happening in the world today explained to you by these nobodies, who somehow become somebodies? People, stop thinking for themselves and let others think for them. I do believe there is such a thing as getting too caught up in conspiracy thinking. In the worldview of the true conspiracist, everything is connected to everything else. Really, no one is able to act as an individual agent because there are invisible forces behind the scenes controlling everything, and no matter what you do, you're a puppet of it. If you do anything important, you can't do it without being a part of this invisible power. So you see a world in which everything is controlled by something which you can't do anything about. This really keeps people from acting. These people that I'm going to talk about tonight are all theorizers. They're theorizing, but they're not really acting. Since I'm focusing on what they say about Adolf Hitler, I would ask you to remember that Hitler was consistent in everything he did. He followed a plan that he had laid out, and it was public. He made it public. It was not hidden. He talked all the time to his associates and those around him about his own worldview and why it was important. Those who put so much energy into portraying Hitler as different from what he really was and distorting the facts in order to do so are the ones whose motives must be questioned. So let's take Alex Jones first. Alex Jones regularly, not surprisingly, has Jim Mars, Webster Tarpley, David Icke on his program, and I've heard him praise Henry Mackow also. So the whole crowd is there, helping each other out. Now, Alex is said to have increased his Nazi talk in the past year. See, I don't know because I'm not in the habit of listening to him, but I have looked at quite a bit for this investigation I'm doing, and I know that he rarely allows references to Adolf Hitler and the Nazis not to come up, and especially when he's conversing with these people I just named. I just happened to watch a video on his site with David Icke, and David mentions the centralized globalist fascist Orwellian dictatorship. Now, I thought to myself, gee, globalism has become fascism now. When did that happen? Back when there was the world revolution of communism, it was, that the communism had the idea of world taking over the world. And George Orwell, in 1984, in other books, was describing a future communist dictatorship. But now it's morphed into a Hitler-esque fascist globalist dictatorship. And I ask why. I happen to have seen Alex Jones' PrisonPlanet.com sponsored video titled A Nazi Spy on the internet, and the same film is on YouTube titled Bush-Hitler Connection by Fraser. This is a filmed interview of John Buchanan of the New Hampshire Gazette, who seems to be a friend of John Loftus. Now, John Loftus is the former government prosecutor of Nazis in the United States and author of a book and some articles also about Nazis in America. Well, just for your information, Kevin Barrett has had Loftus as a guest on his American Freedom radio program on He had him on January 31st, if you want to listen to this man. And I'm going to be talking more about him in the future. But Buchanan is describing in this film, this video, how he discovered the Bush-Nazi connection through going to the government archives that had recently been made available, et cetera, et cetera. But yet this Bush-Nazi connection is baseless. Buchanan is not credible on this, but he appears to be because, you know, this is a complex subject, and very few will take the trouble to plow through it and find out what's what about it. It's one of those things that sounds good, and so it gets a lot of press. But I also want to mention that Alex Jones has begun a campaign on his website called V for Victory. This is interesting. He's trying to rouse the public against some rather unspecified enemy, which is, again, globalism. The reason he chose the V, in my opinion, is so he can talk about Nazis some more. He describes the meaning of V on his website as saying that it is, well, I've kind of changed it around a bit to make it more accurate. It's the V for Victory, original V for Victory campaign was a BBC-devised British government intelligence operation and propaganda campaign to use this letter V against the German occupation of the Vichy government in France after the Germans defeated the French in 1940 and occupied the country. Of course, it was all done according to the laws of rules of war, and it was all legal. The French signed an armistice and agreed to do certain things, and one was to follow the rules that the Germans had set up. But the British instigated what's called the French Resistance, and they speak of how the French were, so anxious and spontaneously came out with this V idea. Well, really, it wasn't that way at all, and the French Resistance was not very strong, and it was made up mostly of communists and Jews. It wasn't, it's been glamorized since then and made to be full of French people from all walks of life who were just sacrificing or putting their lives in danger to get rid of the Nazis and really what they call the Nazis. But really, the French were, for the most part, not all that unhappy, and there wasn't that kind of resistance going on except by these particular elements. And they were helped by the British intelligence. So a reader commented, what's the point in posting V flyers everywhere? It won't achieve anything. And, this reader is correct because he wrote that on the Alex Jones website. It won't. This is just something that Alex Jones and his PR firm come up with to keep his followers believing that he's at the forefront of taking back the country. And the point is to keep throwing new curveballs into the mix to keep people distracted, which really accomplishes nothing. He's selling T-shirts with V's on them. He wants people. He has people writing in and taking pictures of videos they've made or of places where they've put a V. And yet, it's just going to peter out, and it's not going to amount to anything. So, as I said, Jim Mars is one of Alex Jones' favorite people, and so I'm going to turn to him next. He's often on the air with Alex, but he has his own distinctive career writing books. But the question is, how did he get started? It's interesting. He's another Texan, and after college in 1968, a lot of these people began in the 60s, and we know what the 60s were like. But in 1968, he became a reporter for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. He was given a leave of absence to serve with the 4th Army Intelligence Unit during the Vietnam War. So a lot of these people have been involved with intelligence. Who else had an intel background in Vietnam? Gordon Duff and Wayne Madsen. Now, after he got done with his stint in Vietnam in the intelligence unit, he went back to that newspaper, and he was still an investigative reporter with specializing in military and aerospace subjects. But then, in 1976, he taught a course on the, he began teaching a course on the assassination of President Kennedy at the University of Texas at Arlington, which is, right there in, Dallas-Fort Worth area. And in 1989, his book Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, was published and became a bestseller on the New York Times list in 1992. Now, so in, he didn't write his book until, didn't come out until 89, but in 76 he began teaching this course. Now, about his theory about the assassination of Kennedy, according to Edward Flaherty, Marr's thesis that Kennedy was killed by the men who have control over the Federal Reserve Board can be contradicted using the Congressional Research Service report for Congress. There's a number of it. So, you know, I have not gone and read this, but obviously this person is saying that that the idea that the Federal Reserve people, which really he means the bankers, those international banking establishment, was behind the assassination of Kennedy, can be proven to be wrong by this very good. Some things that Congress does is good. They have this research service, which they set up quite a ways back, which does good work. And so, you know, was he involved with disinfo from this time on, from the time he got out of the Army intelligence? I think it's very possible. Because from there on, he began to write about psychic phenomena. He wrote about remote viewing, a book about remote viewing. Then he wrote a book about UFOs and secret societies. And then he started writing about the 9/11 truth movement. That's how he got his reputation, really, as a 9/11 investigator. And from there, he moved into the Hitler conspiracy theories and published a book in 2008 titled The Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Secret Societies That Threatened to Take Over America. This is the one I'm most interested in. Now, this book was published by HarperCollins in hardcover. This is a major book publisher. If this man is really giving out information that is against the status quo, why would they be publishing his book and promoting it the way that they did, that they have? Now, I haven't read this entire book, but I did read what was available on Google Books, what is available on Google Books, and what you can read there is the introduction, which is pretty long and pretty substantial, and most of the first chapter, part of the second chapter, and part of the third chapter. Then on Amazon, you can read among some of that stuff, you can read also the epilogue and his sources at the end of the book. Now, this book is just dripping with anti-Germanness and really vicious distortions and lies. And the way he uses his sources is very deceptive. I'm going to talk about that first. You know, the best way to use footnotes is to put them at the bottom of the page. And this makes it easy when the reader comes across something that has a number, you know, for a note. You can just look right down at the bottom and see what it is. And so you're likely to look at them all. Now, there's a new way of doing it where you put them all in the back of the book, organized by chapters, but you still have the numbers, and you have the number in the text that you're reading, and then you have to go to the back of the book to that chapter and find that number to read it, which is much more difficult. But it's not impossible. But what he's done here is that he has supposedly the sources for what he is writing, what he's saying in his text at the back, organized under chapters, but there's no number. So you're reading chapter one, and there are no footnote numbers, no endnote numbers at all, and yet you're supposed to go back to the back of the book and find, go to that chapter, and then he has a list of phrases from various sentences, phrases that, you know, throughout the chapter. And next to each one is a book or a magazine or newspaper that it came out of, and the page number, if there's a page number. But there's no numbers that link the one to the other. You have to figure that out yourself. This is absolutely incredible, really. And the people who are doing this, they, you know, this kind of thing is starting to be done. I saw another book. It was called The Medical Casebook of Adolf Hitler. another book where the author didn't want you to study his sources. So all this does is to discourage checking what the sources, the information in the book is based on. And most people are not going to do it. They're just going to, as they're reading through the book, they don't come across any numbers to say, oh, there's a source for this. So they just read the book and say, well, I'm sure that it's all, you know, he's got it all accounted for, so I don't have to worry about it. Well, the writing of this book is really at 7th or 8th grade level, I would say. And it's for those who don't or can't can't read real books, serious books, but want a simplified version of history. And it's similar to seeing the movie made from a book rather than reading the book. You know, I mean, it's like, here's a simple way to understand what happened back then. The introduction begins with the fantasy of Hitler escaping the bunker. This is one of the very popular ideas that I mentioned last week. He says it's plausible even though there's no evidence for it. Now, you know, of course there is no evidence for it. Well, why tell the story? Why make up stories? It's a fantasy. His whole introduction is sort of about what the Third Reich was like in his view. And then the epilogue, which I also read, tells why America in this New World Order, American New World Order world, is just like Hitler's Third Reich, or it will be. And in between is something that's supposed to tell you why that's true. Some things that I noticed in this book, that he begins his sentences often with things like many people believe, or no one can doubt, or it is possible that, and some researchers believe. You see, all ways in which he's not responsible for what he's saying. He also does a lot of cherry picking. Of course, he cherry picks quotes from other authors. He also does something that others do. He jumps back and forth in his narrative. Say, for example, he's talking about the complicated banking connections, which are very difficult to follow. You'd have to spend a lot of time figuring out just what he's talking about, because he doesn't make it clear. And then he jumps between something that happened in 1934 and then to 1939. Then the next thing is 1926, and from there to 1938, you know, so that you think this is all following along in some kind of progressive way, but it really, he's taking things from all different time periods and throwing them together. It's all just there to confuse you and make you accept, hopefully, what he's saying, and not check out the fact that he's not able to make his case at all. So these particular signs of disinformation we find also in my third name, Webster Tarpley. He has written some books in which he does similar things. Webster Tarpley positions himself as a political and financial expert. He's against the IMF and globalist agenda. He's anti-war. But he always keeps away from mentioning Jews in Israel. That's something that really stands out with Webster more than almost anybody else on my list. The culprits are Bush, Cheney, big oil, big corporations, and fascists. So any way to tie them all together is what he does. Now, I found out just on his Wikipedia page, which I'd never really studied these people before, but it's amazing what you find out. Tarpley is identified as a Marxist and a longtime member of the Lyndon LaRouche political group. He's not a historian. He's not an economist. He has a BA degree in English and Italian, but to give him credit, he's a smart guy. He graduated summa cum laude. His MA is in humanities. He's not a PhD. He can be called, I guess, an intellectual political activist of the far left. And you know, he doesn't reveal where or when he was born or to whom. I could not find that information anywhere. He is keeping that to himself, and nobody seems to know. So here's the connection that I have, why I have him on my list. He co-authored the unauthorized biography of George Bush, and his co-author is the Jew Anton Chaitkin. This book supposedly exposes the ties of Prescott Bush and Averell Harriman to the Nazi Party of Germany. And this book was brought him to national attention. It was published in 1992. And it was published by the Lyndon LaRouche Executive Intelligence Service. He was very much a big part of the LaRouche movement and group. And Anton Chaitman, his co-author, was even more so. Chaitman and LaRouche founded the Lyndon LaRouche movement in the 1960s. Chaitman's father was Jacob Chaitman, a Russian Jew who was the legal counsel and strategist for the boycott against Nazi Germany, carried on by the American Jewish Congress in the 1930s. Yeah, this is the big, major boycott against the Nazis started in the early 30s, and this Chaitman's father was the legal counsel and the chief strategist for that. Tarpley, Chaitman, and LaRouche are unwavering supporters of FDR and his administration and policies. They're just way on the left. And that's where Tarpley's coming from. Now, to skip on, I'm going to say that after 9/11, Tarpley came out with his book Synthetic Terror Made in the USA in March 2005. Crossing the Rubicon came out in 2004, and David Ray Griffin's The New Pearl Harbor came out in 2004. So he was just a year after them. He was one of the very first who came out with 9/11 truth books. And the cover of his book shows pictures of Bush, Cheney, Wolfowitz, and Rumsfeld, those four men, and SEALs of all the U.S. and British intelligence agencies, really, military, non-military, whatever, no Israeli intelligence SEALs. And he has the words Made in USA under the title Synthetic Terror standing out more than anything else as part of the title. So he's really pushing in his book that this was Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, United States, that's who did it. He also packed the book with just about every kind of direction, everything, so that you can come up with lots of different directions to take from it. He wanted to create a host of theories that would keep the questioning people engaged, I would say. Now, Gordon Duff also has featured Tarpley's interviews on his Veterans Today website. So there's another connection with my list. Webster Tarpley, he came out with a video with Alex Jones. So here we have Tarpley, Jones, and Duff all together working on this story. And the title was Mumbai and False Flag Terrorism, What WikiLeaks Was Hiding. Of course, they're right away attacking WikiLeaks as being Israeli Mossad. They came on that so quickly and so vociferously, I really have my doubts about it. But here's what Gordon Duff says about Webster Tarpley. Webster Tarpley exhibits a broad understanding and great personal courage in his analysis of the upcoming nuclear war. Yes, it can come to that between India and Pakistan. That's before the Egyptian thing broke out, and so Tarpley was pushing this idea of the threat of nuclear war between India and Pakistan that we should all be worried about. Duff goes on to say, what is made clear is that it isn't just Iran being scheduled for destruction, but India and Pakistan as well. And then he says, not just by Israel, as so many are now aware, but the CIA and MI6 of Britain as well. See, this is a part of the tying together of all white nations' intelligence and the threat, the terrible threats in the world of war and the terrible things to be afraid of, but mainly so that we keep listening to these people and getting the underlying themes that they're giving us along with their major political wisdom that they're supposedly giving us. The latest on Tarpley that I have is he appeared with Alex Jones talking about the suicide bomber in Moscow. Now here he says, national Bolshevism is now the target. And then he describes national Bolsheviks are fascist, skinhead rowdies, and more like Nazis than a real communist. This is a video you really ought to watch. You know, this guy, when you watch Tarpley, his face, his expressions are so demonic and strange. He's an odd-looking man, very odd-looking. And here he is wanting to do this thing once again that they're doing is changing communism and the things that communism does and to fascism and to something to do with the Nazis. You see, the Bolsheviks are turning into Nazis. They're not, you know, the communists don't exist. They're no threat. There's nothing there, even though they call themselves that. They're really fascists under the skin. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have to take our break now, and I will come back. I made it through the first three.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Upwards of a million people have been demanding that the government of President Hosni Mubarak step down. He is at this point refusing to do so. Let's cross live now to Cairo and RT's Paula Slea, who can give us the latest details here. And hello to you, Paula. So for the first time in 30 years, the government in power has agreed to meet with the Muslim Brotherhood to discuss the future of the government there. The negotiations have come and gone. Tell us, what do you know at this point? What's happened?
Well, the latest is that a decision was reached to establish a committee to investigate constitutional reform. And this is obviously to deal with the government's stance that President Mubarak cannot step down despite the demand from protesters on the streets that he step down immediately until the constitution is dealt with. The committee has been given 1 month to complete its work. It is significant that the Vice President Omar Suleiman met with opposition groups and that among those opposition groups was the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is banned here, and just a few days ago, they were saying that there was no way they would meet with the government until Mubarak first stepped down. Now, the Brotherhood is at pains to say that its position has not changed, that it has called these talks, not negotiations, and it's really said that it went to go and meet with Suleiman to see what was the position of the government, how much it was prepared to meet them halfway, and to put the demands of the people across. There were other parties there. There were leaders of secular parties. There were independent legal experts. There was a representative for Mohammed al-Baradei, who is the former head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, who has indicated that he is prepared to head an interim government. And there was also a representative for Naguib Sawiris, who is Egypt's most wealthy businessman. There are numerous issues on the table that are being looked at. Number one, the dissolution of parliament, as well as the creation of an interim government. Also, the setting up of some kind of committee to investigate the violence of the past few days and bring those people who were responsible to book. They also looking at the right to peaceful demonstrations, the right for journalists to be able to work here freely, and also what the Muslim Brotherhood is insisting on is that there be someone from the youth, someone who represents the young people who are in Tahrir Square as we're speaking, and that without that person they refuse to continue with these negotiations. It is important to say, though, that most people here see this more as a punctuation mark. They don't really believe that these negotiations are going to yield anything, at least not immediately, and that is why we're hearing from protesters that they will continue to gather in various cities around the country.
Well, Paula, as you were saying just now, many Egyptians are divided on whether it makes sense to engage in dialogue with the government that they want out in the first place. But talk to us about the current situation on the streets. Nearly a fortnight now of protests in the central Tahrir Square in Cairo there. We've seen hundreds of thousands in attendance. Are there more fears of further violence as far as you know?
As far as we can gauge, the mood is uncertain, but it's not so much that people are fearing more violence.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager, and I'm feeling a little more relaxed since I managed to get through the three of my names, and so I think I can get through the other three in this last half of the program. I'm talking about disinformation agents on the Internet, and the one I'm speaking of next is David Icke. David Icke is the most total conspiracy theorist on my list, or maybe in the world. He has taken conspiracy to a fine art. He started arguing about organized religions being designed to divide and conquer the human race. As far as I know, that's what was his starting point on a rather spiritual religion basis. And that sounds all right to many people, but remember that this is a very one-world orderish idea, which says that anything that divides us is not good. And that is exactly how far Ike takes us. He wants to turn humanity into something like a disembodied, otherworldly mass of intelligence with no distinctions that would turn people against, with no distinctions that, because distinctions turn people against each other. In other words, he wants to be a religious spiritual leader. That's what he was. But he's now very much into the political arena and managing to bring Hitler into it. So he's a complicated person to talk about. He first got into his idea about the Illuminati Brotherhood and the top level of this all-powerful group that has been living inside the earth since the beginning, before the beginning of history. So they're so well established, there's nothing anybody can do about them. And they're of a reptilian nature, but actually their bodies are holographic veils, and they can appear real to us as holographs. And he actually was saying at one time that George Bush, Tony Blair, Queen Elizabeth, and probably the Pope too, that would be another good choice, were among these reptilian constructs that are running the world from within the earth. And the mass of the population, he said, were sheeple who do whatever they're told by the repeaters. The repeaters are the journalists who write whatever they're told, I guess, because they're also sheeple. And then the last group are those who see through this deception, and they're usually dubbed dangerous and mad, he says. Well, like him, because he was dubbed dangerous and mad and laughed out of Britain, so to speak, although he was still there. He's British. But he went into hiding for a while because he'd made such a fool of himself. But the thing is that when he talks about this last group of people, he uses a celluloid person as an example, Neo from the film The Matrix, as the one who can see through it all, you know, the red and the blue pills. So he uses Hollywood for giving us our heroes and leaders. And I don't like that either, because that's similar to V for Vendetta, where people are looking to celluloid personages as something to follow. There's something a little bit wrong with that. Ike has also written that if the reptilians did not exist, we would have to invent them. In fact, he says we probably have. There are other levels of ourselves putting ourselves in our face. So see, he's making fun, or he's explaining away what he has been teaching people and saying that, you know, that he's really, it's just something that we invent. Really, this man is creating things in his mind to such more extreme extent. So he's a good example for how we can see the rest of them doing it, but they stick better to reality. They stick closer to reality than he does. Now, there's nothing wrong with spirituality, and I understand spirituality, and I know that you can see and know and understand lots of things, but that doesn't have anything to do, really, with our political systems. And if you try to mix it all up, you end up with science fiction, which is where he is, and really all that he offers is science fiction. I've never been a science fiction fan. But he did write the article, "Was Hitler a Rothschild?" He says a lot of things, you know, against Hitler and the Nazis and things he doesn't understand. He talks about IG Farben being the heart of the Hitler war machine. Well, what was the Hitler war machine? You know, I mean, none of this is explained. He says that IG Farben was a division of Standard Oil in reality. It was just, you know, Standard Oil was running it all. Of course, that's the Rockefellers, and the Rockefellers are running the world. But above the Rockefellers are the Rothschilds, and this is the usual Illuminati. I'm not saying there's no truth in that, but it's the way that they apply it. So he says here, the force behind Adolf Hitler on behalf of the Illuminati was the House of Rothschild. He says, the Rothschilds, like the Illuminati in general, treat the mass of the Jewish people with utter contempt. So what he's doing, which I don't like, is turning it around, saying that it's the Jews that are being victimized by the Illuminati. And other people who do this are Henry Mackow, Gordon Duff, and Daryl Smith. In fact, this is one of the major objectives of the disinfo when they're creating disinfo around Adolf Hitler, is to say that the mass of Jewry is separate from the evil ones, and they are the ones who've been victimized. And Hitler was a part of the victimizers, and the Nazis, and the fascists, and they're in tune, they're in league with the globalists, which is epitomized by Rothschild, and so on. And that's a great confusion about what actually goes on, how it actually works. Ike has also said that the bloodline that has produced all 42 of the presidents of the United States, all of them, is this reptilian bloodline, and that the world leaders, of course, Roosevelt, Churchill, Stalin, were all of this reptilian bloodline. All Freemasons and Satanists are of this reptilian bloodline. Therefore, he says, although that same group provably funded Adolf Hitler's rise to power in his war machine, that he would be the odd one out, a leader of crucial importance to the agenda who was not of this bloodline. You know, so this is supposedly why we would believe it. This is the proof that since all the others are reptilian, well, you can't exclude Hitler, so he is too. Now here's an example that I find, it sounds beautiful to people, beautiful, but I find it quite objectionable. This is something written by David Icke. Come on, peoples of the world, no matter what your race, color, or culture, no matter what your religious belief or your spin on life, the freedom, what remains of it for all of us is at stake here, and while we are divided on these irrelevant grounds, that freedom is doomed. Let's work together while there is still time. War is over when we want it. The world is whatever we allow it to be. We want to change the world, okay, let's change ourselves. Well, what's he talking about? What's he talking about? He's saying, let's forget about race, color, culture. Let's forget about your religious beliefs or your spin on life. Let's all come together. That, you know, as I said last week, that cannot happen. That's not the way to go about it. That is a way that just plays into the hands of globalism, one world order, and the destruction of national, racial, ethnic groups on this planet. So I think Ike, for all that he is such somebody that he's made fun of a lot, I think he's a dangerous person. He also buys into the Hitler was a British agent. He didn't write it himself, but he did link to it. He said, if you want to read about Hitler being a British agent, you can find this at Henry Macau's site. Here's an article, and he links to it. So that takes us to Henry Macau, who really, he's another one who, he publishes every kind of thing. He publishes everything under the sun that is far out and baseless. Baseless. And he doesn't care. In fact, once he told me that he didn't care whether a lot of the stuff in his articles cannot, you know, don't have any evidence and cannot be proven and can even be proven false, because he wants to publish things that nobody else will publish or things that people don't know about, even if they're wrong, you know, as long as there's something new for people to consider, he thinks that's good, and that's part of the way he sees free speech or something like that. Well, I didn't think much of him after he said that, because I was trying to talk to him about what was true and what wasn't true, but he didn't care. So he is a half-Jew who claims to have converted to Christianity, but he retains his identification with the Jewish race. He doesn't make any bones about that. That leaves him in a little bit of an odd position. He's a bright guy. He invented some popular board games and made a lot of money out of them. And so maybe he's functioning on his own because he has the money. He can do it. But like Webster Tarpley, you can't find any personal information about him. And it's hard to understand what his motive is, though. I don't know. Except that it could be that because he's a Jew and he identifies, he wants to help the Jews. And so he tries to get into being drawing to him those who are against globalism and so on, and insert in all that what things that will protect the Jews, you know, being so much against Zionism, against bankers, against that, but not against the Jewish people. But his information is full of errors, and like with Daryl Smith, you can easily find out the truth of it and point it out, but it doesn't seem to make any difference. He just keeps publishing the stuff. He's written so many, tons and tons of articles. But here's just some of them that I just listed down. Nazis SS-funded nascent Israeli army. That was just in 2010. Which hidden power created Hitler? Why did the Illuminati hate the Jews? Hitler psychiatrist cited sexual motivation for war. Hitler was a godsend for Israel. And Nazi euthanasia was precedent for Holocaust. Well, now he's, you know, he believes in the Holocaust. But now this article on Hitler as a British agent that David Icke referred us to, the title is The British Agent at Hitler's Ear, Revised. Now, this is a whole bunch of nothing. This tells us about a Baron de Rupp, Billy de Rupp, who he was a Balt who was born in Prussia, but he grew up in England and he was a Britisher, but of German ancestry, which he doesn't prove any kind of not much of a connection there, except that he says that this Baron de Rupp used the Nazis. He was a British agent, and he was there infiltrating the Nazis and learned all this stuff. But it's all more likely that the Nazis knew who he was, of course, and so they used him, or they both were using each other and didn't get too much out of it one way or the other. But he shows a picture with Ernst Hofstengel, who has a whole different story with Hitler, and he claims he was an American agent. And then all of this, and he uses this book by Ladislas, yes, Farrago, which is called The Game of the Foxes, which is a worthless book, a terrible book, and he uses this as evidence for his thesis here. But this book currently has 18 used versions on sale at Amazon from $1.99. So I don't think it had even a single review. That's the kind of material that he uses to back up his stuff. But he ends up saying in this article, straight out, Macau does, Hitler has a British agent funding, advising, and representing him. At what point was Hitler a British agent himself? See, he asked the question. But does he ever show that he was? No, because he tries to put him together with different British people and then saying that they were dealing with Hitler. And now, one of the interesting things in this story is that this fellow named Truman Smith, who was a American military attaché in Berlin, and he was there, you know, in a friendly fashion in the 20s. And in the 30s, as a representative of the American military, and of course, in 1939, he left. But before that, he had Colonel Charles Lindbergh come and got permission for him to inspect the German aircraft industry and the reorganized Luftwaffe, and they allowed him to do that, and Lindbergh made 5 inspection trips, and then Lindbergh returned to the United States in 1939, and he told the Americans that they should do more for military preparations and stick with American neutrality. He was a big isolationist, as you know, is what they call him. He didn't want America to get into any war. Because of that, even though Lindbergh and Smith brought back lots of good intelligence for their country, America, they were denounced in the press as fascists because they weren't wanting to go to war, and they were called henchmen for the Third Reich. And so their intelligence was not made use of, which was stupid, of the Americans. Okay, in conclusion in this article, Henry Macau says this, Baron William de Rupp, Hofstengel, and Smith, meaning Truman Smith, are further evidence that World War II was contrived by the Illuminati to destroy the nations of Europe and provide a rationale for Israel. Now, there is nothing in this article that is evidence for that. It's just a lot of circumstantial happenings here and there. But he then goes on to say, by Illuminati, I'm referring to the satanic circles emanating from the European aristocracy, the Rothschilds, and the Rockefellers. He says, history is theater scripted by these psychopaths to degrade and enslave mankind while increasing their own power and wealth. By obscuring this truth, most historians, writers, and journalists are accomplices. Now, what he's doing here, and this is not only him that does this, constantly telling you not to believe anything. Don't believe anything you read, anything anybody's written, because everything is a lie, and therefore, yeah, I guess you're supposed to believe him. There's nothing left to believe. And what he says is utter nonsense. So this is a way to just play around with people, waste people's time. Okay, my conclusion, this is not history. And I need to move on to Wayne Madsen because, I'm skipping Alan Hart because I have talked about him in the past. But Wayne Madsen is a very interesting guy. He is the last person on my list. And, you know, I've thought for a long time that he is a communist. And now I find out that he was born in 1954 to a father, a Danish father, who was on a merchant vessel that shipped arms to Republican Spain during the Spanish Civil War and who later joined the international brigades fighting against General Franco. Now, that was a communist effort there against Franco. His grandmother, Wayne's grandmother, his father's mother, was a Danish Communist Party official and newspaper reporter who during World War II was a leader in the Danish resistance movement and was involved in organizing the smuggling of Danish Jews to Sweden. Now, they both immigrated to the United States, his grandmother and father, after World War II. Then he was born in 54. It says in the 50s, in the 1950s, Victoria Madsen was deported by the FBI after attempting to organize hospital employees into a union. So I guess her organizing was a little bit more than the legitimate kind of organizing. So finally she was deported. Now this is what Madsen grew up in, this atmosphere, and yet he attended the University of Mississippi. I don't know if that's where they lived, but that's pretty not very liberal down there, where he joined the Navy ROTC. Now, if you're grown up in a communist family, it's kind of odd that you joined the ROTC. But then again, if you are interested in being on the inside of something that you don't like, you might do that. So that's all I can say about that. I don't know. We don't know his reasons, but he may have said it somewhere, but that doesn't mean he's telling the truth either. So in 1982, he was stationed at Coos Head Naval Facility, and he was involved in a sting operation conducted by the FBI and the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, which ended in the arrest of his commanding officer for pedophilia. And then it says that he was given a bad fitness report by his executive officer. Most of this comes from his own writings. He wrote a few books. So this is where most of this information comes from, I think. In 1984, he was loaned to the National Security Agency by the Navy, which is the intelligence department of the Department of Defense. And he was loaned to work in computer security. So in 1985, then, he resigned. He was a lieutenant, and he says the reason was that he had been passed over for a promotion because of a pedophilia homosexual ring that I guess existed, and he didn't want to play ball with them or something like that. So then, according to him, in 1985 to 1989, he worked as a government consultant for contracts for the National Security Agency, again, the DOD intelligence agency. This is a big deal. I mean, this is our military intelligence. Later, he worked for the Naval Data Automation Command as a civilian employee. Well, I guess when you work for the DOD, you're a federal employee, and then he worked as a civilian employee. And then he went and worked for the State Department for a while. And then in 1990 to 1997, he worked for a Computer Science Corporation in Falls Church, Virginia. Well, you know, in Virginia, that's where the CIA is, and also so close to Washington. And so most of the businesses there are working for the government. And that's probably what this Computer Science Corporation was doing. So in 1997 to 2005, Then he worked for the Electronic Privacy Information Center. And he says that he left there for the same kind of reasons of pressure that he gave for leaving his other jobs. He was always put under pressure because I guess he was, he was not going along with the program properly or something the way everybody else was. So he says that in 2005 he became a freelance journalist and began publishing his own blog. Now, what makes sense about this guy is that he was involved in so much intelligence. As far as his journalism career goes, he styles himself on Drew Pearson, who was known for attacking public persons with little or no proof for their allegations. On his website, he says, under Who Are We, he says, in the tradition of Drew Pearson and Jack Anderson's famous Washington merry-go-round syndicated column, that's what he wants to be. And Drew Pearson had very well-known communist sympathies, and his staff members, David Carr and Andrew Older, were identified in the 50s as Communist Party members, and their family members, too. And Drew Pearson publicized a slapping incident that led to General George Patton's being relieved of command of the 7th Army. He made unsubstantiated allegations against James Forrestal, who was later murdered. He was an anti-communist Secretary of Defense. Pearson was definitely communist, and some people called him a communist agent. In fact, he allowed his column to be used as a mouthpiece or an organ for the British propaganda that was allowed to operate in the United States, the British intelligence, at least from 1939 on, in order to get the Americans willing to want to go to war and help the British against the Germans and the Japanese. So this is the history of Wayne Madsen. And then I have some stuff from some of his radio programs, but it just reaffirms that he talks about the Nazis a lot. A lot. Now here from January 29th on his program, he says, every fascist regime has its court clowns. For example, Nazi Sally, Lord Ha Ha, broadcasting from Nazi Germany. And then later he says, the smell of fascism in the morning when a caller tells him he's on a roll. And then he was talking just this past Saturday night about Egypt, and he is exultant that he says this is going to turn into a world revolution. It will spread across Africa, soon coming to sub-Saharan Africa and Asia. Don't forget Europe. There were mass demonstrations in Serbia today and in Belgrade and in Albania. This is a global phenomenon. He is hoping for a world revolution. And he quotes Karl Marx favorably. He's so excited. He used a quote from Karl Marx, and he couldn't help himself. So that's all I have time to talk about today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry I had to rush so much. I want to say that these people all try to make you think they are on your side. The people who listen dearly want to believe that these people are on their side, and they're their friends, and they're working, they're fighting, they're trying to bring about a better world, and you have to watch out for. We have to look closely at these people, and I am sorry I could not look even more closely, but I have to say good night for now, and I will hope you'll come back next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.